Three straight wins for the Phoenix Suns after a narrow but still valid victory over the Memphis Grizzlies. On today's episode of Locked On Suns, we'll break down this win, the stretch the Suns are on, getting their mojo back, and what comes next. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Monday, a victory Monday, a winning Monday, a winning streak Monday. And so we have a lot to talk about. Wherever you're finding the show, go ahead and hit follow or subscribe. Get this show in your feed every single Monday through Friday to get the latest on your favorite basketball team. We have a few things to get to before we dive into this 112 to 110 victory. Brandon Duenas is here. He is a writer at Bright Side of the Sun, joining us on Mondays as he always does. Brandon, just give me your quick take on this game before we announce the winner of this shirt giveaway and run through some other stuff for the people. What's your vibe right now after a big win?
Feels good to win. First off, you know, this three-game win streak is very much needed, and what has kind of felt like a very bleak season got pretty, you know, kind of snowballed pretty quick there. But I think now that we're starting to see some guys come back, this is going to be the usual for the Suns, hopefully, going forward, that they're going to be in close games, hopefully not blowing a 29-point lead again. But you'll take any win you can get at this point. And just the growth from Mikal Bridges, just that's the main thing that stands out these last, you know, five, six games, especially some of the off-the-dribble stuff he's done. Chris Paul was magnificent. I think just from top to bottom, that was outside of their defense there in the fourth quarter. I think that was one of the best games they've played defensively, especially those first two quarters.
Absolutely. We're going to hit Chris Paul and Mikal Bridges in the next segment. I want to focus on big picture in this first segment. First, I want to remind everybody to also be following us on Twitter at LockedOnPHXSuns, where you can jump in with your seven words or less game takes. We have Jared at JRank0, Landale, Šarić, and Biombo play with double the effort. We also have Brandon at ZonaHoops_ with point guard back. Mikal Bridges can dribble. That's exactly seven. That is what we like to see. Jared, I'm not going to fault you, but that's more than seven. You're lucky I read it. You know the deal. It has to be seven or less. That's how we do it in Phoenix. Also, before we get any further, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. First time users can receive 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. We also, one more piece of housekeeping, have a winner of the Suns Sunburst Vintage T-shirt. I told you guys I would pick the best comment on a five-star review. I have it. I won't read the full thing. It's from Sonny and Gilbert. He asked me if it's plagiarism to constantly steal my thoughts and opinions, so he just really sucked up to me, and that's what got it done. I often need ammo for a group of friends who love to hate on the Suns. Safe to say I'm constantly regurgitating your info from the podcast. So, Sonny, it's Sonny and G-Town is your, like, Apple name. Sonny and Gilbert is how you sign the review. Whatever your name is, whatever you want to be called, please email me. My email is in my Twitter bio. You can go to Twitter, find me wherever, and message me, and I will mail you this shirt ASAP this week, get it to you. Thank you, everybody who left a comment. There were 5 to 10 really good ones from the past week or so. I have a pack of cards I'm going to be giving out this upcoming week. I'm not going to do that today, but just keep posted, stay tuned, and you might have a chance at that as well. All right, Brandon, let's get into this game. So, third straight win. As you mentioned, it was a tale of two halves. 62-37 was the final score after the first half, and then 73-50 in Memphis's direction in that second half. Ja Morant was much, much better in the second half. I think that was really what led them to get back into this game. Zaire Williams, they picked up the pace. It felt much more like Grizzlies basketball in that second half, and the Suns were lucky to to gut it out. Big picture, though, what I'm coming away from this game thinking, and people have been calling me crazy in the comments section, on social media, whatever, with my optimism, and it really started after that Warriors game, and yes, the Nuggets game right after that wasn't pretty. They've continued to lose. They just got blown out by this Grizzlies team last week by 30 points. But I have felt like they're playing with much more competitive spirit, much more force in all these games. Cam Johnson's back. Chris Paul's back tonight, like you said. Does this feel like a turning point in the season to you? Is it fair to jump to that after these three wins?
100%. And I think if it was just one win or just one game, then, you know, that's not going to turn your season around. But you start to string three in a row, you get that confidence back, and these guys are going to keep coming back one by one. Hopefully Book will be back soon. And, you know, it feels like they had a healthy roster today, and you still look at their injury report and they still have quite a long list. So no Book, no Ayton, you know, their top two reserve guards and Shamet and Payne both out. So, and then Jay Crowder, obviously just, you know, doing whatever he's doing at home. So this team is still pretty banged up. They're not 100%, but I think just stringing together these wins are huge, because now all of a sudden you look at the standings, and this is what we talked about before, is how quick things could change in the West, and they're the seventh seed and just, you know, what, 2.5 games out from the home court advantage in the West, just like that. So that's that goes in both directions, though. So they need to keep trying to rattle as many wins off as they can as they get these guys back. But I definitely think it's a turning point for sure.
What I think people were forgetting, and all of that's valid for sure. The Warriors had a really bad loss tonight. Oklahoma City, the Lakers, these teams have all been beating up on each other. And what I think people forgot, while the Suns were bad, and obviously they went from the top to the bottom, they didn't have a purely 500 first half like some of these teams did, where they were just average the whole time. But still, I understand being negative on where the Suns were. We all were. It was awful. It looked really bad. But again, feeling better about the way they've been playing, even if the losses have still been piling up recently, even when healthy, even if we still have some questions and Booker has to lift like Atlas with the globe on his shoulders or whatever, they're still better than these teams. Like, I just, that might not be deep analysis, but Minnesota, Utah, Golden State, we know what their question marks are. Oklahoma City, the Lakers, the Trailblazers, those are all the teams, the Clippers, that are in their tier right now in the West from a record standpoint. I just think the Suns are just better than all those teams. Like, do they have enough to push now that they've dug themselves this hole? Will they beat, you know, those upper teams in a playoff series? Those are all questions that we can answer later. But as it stands right now, part of the reason I just felt optimistic is I knew they had wins like this Grizzlies win in them, because they have talent that these other teams just don't have at the end of the day.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why, you know, last week's episode, when we were just talking about the whole tanking thing, and we're both on the same side of that coin, just saying that this team's too good. They're going to go on a streak at some point, especially if they get healthy. And right now they're not even close to being full strength, and they're already on a little bit of a streak. So I think just, you know, as long as they continue to stay locked in, that this team is going to climb the standings pretty quick. And, you know, before, people were a little bit worried about the play-in game, but I think at this point you have to start looking at home court advantage, especially if they make an upgrade at the trade deadline. You know, ever since Matt Ishbia has been in attendance, they're what, 3-0, so keep him in Phoenix. Do not let him go home. But yeah, I think, like you said, it's just, you know, the West is wide open, and they're better than a lot of those teams that are vying for those, you know, whether it's like the 6 through 10 seed right now.
Home games against Charlotte, Toronto, Atlanta, even Dallas. I know, you know, people probably aren't too cocky about playing the Mavs after last year's playoffs, but that's not an elite team, and the Suns beat them on opening night at less than their best already. So that could be a win. And then the only road game in the next five is at San Antonio, which even in a depleted state, you would think the Suns have a pretty good shot at. So we've talked about the timing. Were the injuries badly timed because it came during a bunch of road games that were against great teams? Or was that maybe good to just get the awful out of the way and make a run? We'll see, but I just think you can't help but be pretty optimistic. All things considered, no DeAndre Ayton tonight, too. He's been sick. You don't know if he'll maybe play Tuesday, but they kept him out of this back-to-back with a non-COVID illness. So different pieces stepping up, that spirit getting them over the hump in a lot of these games. I just think they're playing harder. If you watched like that Knicks game or some of these other ones and you watch what they're playing like now, yes, they're a little bit healthier, but or the Rockets game, there were some awful, awful losses where you really started to question things. I don't think it's as dire at all right now. But as Brandon mentioned, we have to talk about the two stars of the game, Mikal Bridges and Chris Paul, combined for 46 points, 15 assists, and some interesting comments from Chris Paul postgame. I think we're going to see those two guys and Devin Booker continue to adapt the way that they were early in the season when they were all healthy. Sharing the ball, we'll talk about how they can balance and have a little bit of a three-headed monster going forward. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by Prize Picks. Daily Fantasy was stale, it was old, it was a little broken. Prize Picks came in, they fixed it, basically, is the deal. They make it so you're not competing against a league, not competing against a pool. You're just competing against the Prize Picks player projections. You just pick 2 to 6 players, and if they will score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, and you can win up to 25 times your money on any entry. Again, not competing against other people around the world, people who do it for a living, people who are trying to game the system. It's just you versus those projections, and you don't even have to pick scoring. So scoring more or less could be in basketball rebounds, in football rushing yards. You can do fantasy points. They have that loaded in, and it's for any sport you love to watch. Basketball, football, tennis, with the Australian Open going on right now, fight sports, whatever you love, Prize Picks has projections for it. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less, and they offer safe and fast withdrawals. So download the Prize Picks app now or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play this awesome daily fantasy sports game. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That means if you deposit $100, Prize Picks gives you $100. Don't forget to enter the promo code Locked On and sign up to take advantage of that offer for an instant deposit match up to $100. 46 combined points, Brandon, for Chris Paul and Mikal Bridges. 79 combined minutes, which we can talk about maybe if you want to. Continuing to ride his stars is what we see for Monty Williams. But it was a 15-point first quarter for Chris Paul. It was a huge first half for Mikal Bridges. Then we see Bridges make two big threes at the end of regulation. He's guarding Ja Morant. Chris Paul is aggressive. He had a couple of steals on Ja Morant, I believe, just flooding the paint and stripping him. Just an all-around performance. It felt like a vintage kind of Suns night where you're getting two-way performances up and down the roster, starting with the unselfishness and kind of two-way play of the guys up top.
Yeah, and they're going to need that, I think, from their two best players right now with Book and Ayton out. Those two guys had to both have great games for them to win. And each of their games kind of came in different moments where Chris Paul just took over the first quarter. And that was vintage CP3, really. And just the way he was shooting the three was awesome. They need him to be that confident all the time. He kind of cooled down a little bit there after that, but he was still shooting, which they're going to need from him this season, especially when Book's back. And Mikal's ability to put the ball on the floor and just like the playmaking, I think he made some really confident passes, a little like flash on some of them, and some stuff that you just would never think of Mikal doing, like maybe this time a year ago even. So in a weird way, like some of these injuries could be a blessing in disguise just in terms of their development. If Mikal could add some playmaking and off the dribble shooting, he had a crossover where I think Zaire Williams, was lost. He needed a GPS or something because he hit him with a quick, 1-2 move and hit a pull up. And he had a couple of those other game too. So I think if Mikal can really add to that, Chris Middleton type mid range where he's just making tough pull ups with his length too, it's just so tough to guard. So that's going to be huge for the Suns' development, like in terms of just having a second option, assuming they don't go out and trade for someone else, and just that shot creation is just tough to find in the NBA.
It is. Let's circle back to Mikal. I do like so when you lose somebody at the elbow, this is going to be, I won't call it a dad joke, but it might be a little bit of one. I thought, could that be called a funny bone? Cause it's at the elbow and it was, Yeah, no.
It's definitely a dad joke.
It is, but it was the best I could do. Your GPS thing might have just been a better place to leave it. Let's get back to Mikhail in a second, because I saw you tweet the Chris Middleton comparison, and it's a better comp for his game than some of the ones we had thrown around in the past. But to return to Chris Paul, so he had a sick no-look pass to Torrey Craig. That was a nice highlight of his own. Five turnovers. I feel like a couple of those were late in the game. I don't remember. He's had a lot of these games this year where it doesn't feel like a big turnover game for him, and then you look up and it's like 4, 5, 6. But the Grizzlies do that to you. I'm not going to overreact. I liked his aggressiveness too. I think that was the biggest thing. And I've been on the side all year of, I'm not trying to discount the pain or physical stuff he's going through at all, but I do think the length of the absences that we've seen him go through this year, to me, has very much felt like he is being more patient and being more deliberate with the recovery than he probably needs to be. Like, if this was 3 years ago, Chris Paul, I would imagine he's maybe missing half the amount of time on these two injuries, because they haven't been a sprain or a tear or an any, you know, it's just soreness and stuff is all we've really seen. So that gives you a guy who can come back and play 38 minutes, score 22 points, and be really aggressive. With Mikhail Bridges, that comp is pretty fascinating to me, and I want to dive into it a little bit more, because I think in the past we had probably maybe unfairly placed, like, you know, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, some of these freak development stories of guys who kind of came out of nowhere and turned into studs pretty early in their careers. And I think that ship has probably sailed, because he's in year 5, but Chris Middleton is interesting because he was a little bit of a late bloomer. He has a pretty, you know, jumper-based game, but he is a good two-way player. He has that length. His shot is uncontestable, just like Bridges' is. I really like that. I don't know if I just missed it and that's been out there for a while, but when you tweeted that, I was getting pretty excited, because that could be the trajectory for Mikhail that could really take him forward, is playing a game a little bit more like that.
Yeah, I think you nailed it in terms of, like, just the player comp, like with those Kawhi and Paul George. Like, he doesn't really have, like, the athleticism and explosiveness those guys had. Not to say he's not athletic, because he is, but it's just a different type of game. And I think Middleton's just pull-up game was reminiscent a couple times a night. And I think I've tweeted that before, like, at some point last season when he had, like, a hot stretch, I made that comparison. So if someone has one before that, you know, you can take credit for it. But until then, like, I'll take credit for that comparison. But yeah, I think just his ability to get to his spots, like, Chris Middleton does an excellent job of that. He's not the quickest player. He doesn't have the best handle, but he just knows exactly how to dissect a defense. And that's just work ethic, right? And Mikhail has that. So I think if he continues to, you know, just pull up confidently, like, he's going to get to where he wants and no one's going to touch a shot. And that's just the next evolution of his game. And, you know, I can't, like, talk about Mikhail without giving a shout out to Torrey Craig, because he was huge for them in this game. He had some big threes that I thought really swung the momentum early on in the game. And then also the bigs, you know, shout out to the bigs. They had 18 fouls between the three of them, and they used 17 of them. So it took everything. So that, you know, they were fighting against a very strong Steven Adams, and they tried their best to hold their own.
I mean, when Adams and Clark are 4 of 9 combined from the free throw line, it's pretty smart fouling, in my opinion. I mean, Jaw's going to get there, obviously. Bane is a weird player. Conversation for a different time. Locked On Grizzlies can cover that. But he has the quietest 20-plus point games that I feel like you ever see sometimes. And it's weird to have such a good player. I always feel like when I watch them, I come away wanting more from him, and then the box score makes me look like an idiot. But watching the games, it still feels that way. He got to the line 6 times, but you're absolutely right. And I think with Craig, I was tweeting, like, dumbfounded during this game that Memphis was guarding him like he was a cone for a drill. It's like, he's an NBA player. He's a veteran player who scores 15 to 20 regularly. This is not like some kind of unforeseen explosion from him. I mean, I think he tied his season high in three-pointers made. He obviously was more efficient than maybe normal. 7 of 9 is not like what you get from Torrey every night, but there was a play where Dylan Brooks just double-teamed Chris Paul at the top of the key, just left Torrey Craig, almost like it was a zone, but I don't think it was, and Craig just canned an easy jumper. He was cutting because they were devoting so much attention. There would be so many times when Mikhail or Chris would just dump it off to the roller, Dario or Jock most of the time, and they would just come, send Torrey's man to the paint to try to contest at the basket to take away the layup, which I get, but Dario, Jock, those guys can make that pass. They do it all the time. The Suns have short roll passing down. That's not a hard thing for them, and Torrey was just making open shots. So absolutely deserves some credit. I know there's no easy answers in an NBA defense, but leaving a guy who we know can make shots just completely open to take threes and cut was an interesting choice by the Memphis Grizzlies, and he made him pay for it.
Yeah, there's, I think, Kogi too. There's a possession where, I mean, he only shot 1-3, but he was completely wide open, and it was like just a normal half-court possession with a set defense. So, you know, the Grizzlies were inviting Craig and Kogi and guys like that to shoot, which, you know, for Craig, it's probably a little bit less smart. But yeah. I think it's in terms of just like the back-breaking threes, like Jay Crowder used to be that guy on the Suns where like he would just randomly have a night and just kind of, you know, if you're a fan of the other team, you're like, did Jay Crowder really just hit like 7 threes against us? And that's kind of what Torrey Craig has done this season quietly. It's not as high volume, but he'll have his moments where if you leave him open, he'll make you pay.
He did have that turnover late on the cut that I kind of like a similar play to what I was just talking about. He had made it all night and then he fumbled the pass. It was a low, it kind of hit him in the knees. I'm not going to take too much away from him on that. It was a bang bang play, but other than that, he was fantastic. Big reason they won. That actually leads us perfectly into the game I wanted to play to close the show, which is a little bit of a rotation roulette, I guess we can call it. We're going to go through the players. Now that the Suns are getting healthier, the injury light at the end of the tunnel is clearly visible, and talk through who might actually be playing when they just settle on their 10 guys in a couple weeks, maybe sooner. We'll talk about that next first. Today's show is also brought to you by our fantastic new sports betting partner, which is the FanDuel Sportsbook. The NFL playoffs are here, and we're very excited about our new sports betting partner for the Locked On Podcast Network because they're the number one sportsbook in America. That is, again, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers who join today can get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has all your favorite bets from the money line to point spreads to player props. Plus, you can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. The conference championship games over in the NFL are set, and so are the lines over at FanDuel Sportsbook. We have the Eagles favored by 2.5 at home, and the Chiefs favored by 1.5 at home. That feels a little too close for comfort over in the AFC, but the over-unders are set as well. 47.5 for Bengals Chiefs. I feel like it could go a little higher than that. We did see a shootout last year with Kansas City in the playoffs. We know Cincinnati can get them off too. That and more over at the FanDuel Sportsbook, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. All right, so Brandon, we talked about the Suns 112-110 win. We talked about Mikhail stepping up, Chris stepping up, some of the other guys on this roster. But watching this game, we talked about also the run that might be in them. I was really thinking about the rotation because Cam Johnson started this game after playing off the bench in the first one. He was under 20 minutes or so, maybe 21 or 22 in that first game. He was at 29 today. I would imagine it won't be long before he doesn't have a minutes limit, really. Chris Paul was back. We know Deion Drayton. It's just a sickness. He will be back. Okogie is back from the broken nose. We don't know about Booker. That should be fairly soon. Campaign, I'm not sure on. Landry Shamet, I'm not sure on. Those are both foot injuries. We haven't gotten really much of any update on those two guys, so that might be a little longer. But I want to start with this rotation roulette game with Saben Lee, because he wasn't amazing in this game, but I didn't record after the Indiana game, and he was very, very good in that game, and he just got his second 10-day contract. What I want to ask you first before we get into the rotation nitty-gritty is, what are the Suns going to do with Saben Lee? I have started to throw out some teasers on Twitter of my thoughts on this. I haven't really talked about it on the podcast. What would you do? They have an open roster spot. They have these other two-way players who they could mess around with, or they could just let him go after the second 10-day. He can't sign another 10-day. So where do you think this is headed with him?
Yeah, I think Saban's definitely earned a right to stick around and see what you have in him and make that guard spot or guard rotation more of a competition, which is something that's should be good news for Suns fans at this point, that they have multiple options. But I think what we're going to see is Ish Wainwright's contract getting converted, and, you know, Saban slots there in a two-way, or they can go ahead and try to bring Saban on and keep him around with a full-time contract as well. But also, I think you have to factor in what James Jones wants to do at the trade deadline. Are they going to do a two-for-one? Are they going to, you know, try to free up another roster spot and kind of let that problem take care of itself naturally? That's also another way they can go about it. But I think, yeah, it's a good problem to have. I think Saban was a nice pickup. He was in training camp with them. He's familiar with the team, and he's, you know, obviously an Arizona native, so it's pretty cool to see him thriving so far. Like you said, today he didn't have the greatest game, but he's shown some flashes that are very legit. He has some shift and some burst, gets to the rim, he attacks, and that's something the Suns need desperately. So when Campaign gets back and Shamet gets back, you know, this, I don't think they're gonna have any guarantees at this point in terms of minutes. It's, you know, who's playing the best. You know, it's a deep guard rotation, and that's how Monty's gonna should set it up at least.
So Lee will be with this second 10-day. It'll take him through the game on January 30th at home against the Raptors. The Suns are also home two nights later against the Hawks before they leave for, I think, their last long road trip of the season, basically. Five-game road trip at the beginning of February. I would think Booker will be back by that point, but I'm not sure about anybody else in terms of Payne doesn't seem close. Dwayne Rankin has said that Shamet isn't even really at practice right now. You talked about a competition. I think Damian Lee has earned minutes. He will be there. We know Chris Paul and Devin Booker, that's a given. They're starting. Beyond that, though, would it be crazy for the Suns to cut Dwayne Washington? Or you sound pretty bullish on Ish Wainwright, so I would imagine your answer is no to that one. Would they cut Dwayne Washington so that Saben Lee can just take that two-way spot and then you still keep your open roster spot? Because the problem is, if you convert Ish Wainwright, you're hampering yourself a little bit with the flexibility, like you just mentioned, with the trade deadline stuff. I always felt like having that roster spot was a strength. Obviously, you also could have a buyout player come. Whereas if you just cut Washington or Wainwright, but I would agree, Wainwright is more solidly in the rotation. He's produced better this year. He's been on the team longer. Then you still keep the open roster spot and you get to keep Saben Lee. And then you cut the guy who, as much as I know Suns fans probably want to unsubscribe to the podcast the minute I start trashing Dwayne Washington, he's not in the rotation. Like, you just have to be realistic that Monty doesn't seem to trust him. I could see it going that direction because Lee has already kind of jumped over him in the rotation. Why not on the roster too?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's my reasoning behind it, being thinking Wainwright's probably going to would be the one to get converted if you're going to choose between one of the two, because if you're making plans to clear room for Saben, then Washington kind of ends up being the odd man out, because you're going to have three guards coming back from injury. You have Chris Paul, you have Damian Lee. So the guard rotation really starts to shrink in terms of minutes and opportunity. So it wouldn't shock me if Washington was the odd man out, but they could, like I said, they could also be strategic with this and try to make a trade. Like, maybe they make a trade before that second 10 day is up and, you know, something happens naturally where they clear a roster spot or they convert one of those two. So there's a lot of options here, yeah. But I think at this point, Ish is probably would be the favorite between you know, him and Washington, just because they need more size and strength too, just, you know, as depleted as they are, they have been at least this season. Mm-hmm. So I would give him the edge over Washington right now. If you're picking between the two, it's not even a talent thing. It's just a roster build thing.
I mean, and I think the reality is too, like you mentioned with Saban at the beginning of all of this, he brings something that no one else does, especially while Payne is still out. Whereas Washington, it's like, he can do more with the ball in his hands, I guess, than Shamet or Lee. But in reality, we've seen him struggle when the ball is actually in his hands, like as a point guard. And so if he's not really going to be that and he needs to be set up, I'm not saying that he has no opportunity to continue to develop as an NBA player. But on this team, is he really doing anything for you that once you're healthy, that Shamet or Lee aren't doing? And whereas Saben Lee, the answer is yes. I think his on-ball defense is pretty good. I feel like his rim pressure, his energy, all that stuff, he is a little bit of a different flavor. So I'm not advocating to cut Dwayne Washington. I agree the best plan of action, the most smooth way for all of this to go would just be to say, we're making a trade before the second 10-day, and then we're going to decide about who's staying and what we're doing after that once we know the Jay Crowder situation, what the roster will look like. But that might not be possible. All right, on that note, though, you talked about Ish Wainwright. Let's get into the forward spot. We talked about the guards. The forward spot, I want to ask you, should Josh Okogie be playing over Ish Wainwright? Let's just start there. With this rotation roulette. Yeah. Okay. And he did tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
13 minutes, 3 minutes for Ish Wainwright. All right. So you agree with that. Should he be playing over Torrey Craig? Do you see that being a realistic thing?
I would have to give Craig the edge there. But I do think just in terms of just having that instant energy, like there's going to be nights where you're going to need an Okogie to give you that spark. So I don't think he's going to be completely out of the rotation once they're full strength, but it's going to be, like you said, it's going to be tough to find these minutes. So it very well could be a case of Craig or Okogie. But yeah, it's going to be tough to find minutes. So I'd have to give Craig the edge there.
They both have these games where they'll just disappear and they just don't have something to fall offensively. They just don't have something to fall back on to really impact the game at a consistently high level offensively, and I think that's kind of the problem for both of them. But I would agree with you that Craig, he can do more in terms of spot up shooting, cutting. He seems to be a little bit more consistent with that stuff. But I just think you would be holding yourself back if you take Okogie fully out of the rotation. We saw Monty at times when they were getting a little bit closer to being healthy after Chris came back the first time, right? But before Book came back and Okogie wasn't really in the rotation. I would just say to think of him, the reason I put him in this group is to think of him a little bit more like a forward, because it felt like Monty was considering him more as part of the guard group. You would see Shamet and Lee get a lot of minutes, and that seemed to be when Okogie would be kind of stuck on the outside looking in. I would be really with this Wainwright Craig group. That's the mix that I would be trying to get Okogie in. You can play him as the, you know, three and have him defend those guys. I really think you can. You don't have to worry too much about rebounding, especially on the offensive glass. He's a lot like Torrey Craig in that regard. So I think he should be in that rotation, but it's TBD, obviously. Center spot. We saw Dario Saric close the game tonight because the other two guys fouled out, which you mentioned. Who should be the backup center when Ayton is healthy and this team is trying to solidify a rotation to make a run in the stretch of the season?
So Dario was awesome tonight, and he looked as like confident as I think we've seen him since coming back from injury. So I think if he can get back to his old ways, he should be the primary option. I think he unlocks the most upside within the offense, just with his passing and, you know, just knowing the system. So I think he really unlocks the offense to another level. I know that term's been overused with Dario, but I had to have
you didn't
to say.
Say campaign, so you're good.
True. Yeah, true. So past that. But yeah, I think it's going to come down to matchups too, honestly. Like a lot of it's going to come down to who they're playing in any given night. It could be Bismack could be a better option. It could be Landale. But I think honestly, Dario probably does what Landale does a little bit better when you're looking at him at full strength. So I think if Dario can have a big second half of the year, he could end up being a very important rotation piece for them. And especially if he's taking it coast to coast and getting and ones, that was awesome.
People were more, I mean, I know he's been struggling returning from the injury, but people were more surprised by that. I felt like it was a little disrespectful. I'm like, you know, let's put some respect on Dario's name. He was a 12th overall pick for a reason. When he was in Philly, he did stuff like that. I know it's been a while, but we forget so soon. A guy has one injury and we act surprised when he can dribble the ball again. But no, I mean, he has not busted moves like that out in a very long time. I hope it's a good sign of things to come for him. I was surprised all season why they didn't try him at center more. And I wonder if it wasn't just because they thought they had better options. And maybe now, I think Biombo will always have a role. I mean, we saw him, you know, collecting dust on the bench. And then all of a sudden, in the end of that Dallas series, here comes Busy, you know. So I think he'll always have a role. And we know he's going to play hard, and the coaching staff knows he's going to play hard, so you don't have that concern. You don't have to keep him ready, so to speak. But I feel like Monty is just maybe starting to realize that what you just said is kind of true, which is I don't know what Landale does outside if he's a little taller and a little more athletic, but, you know, that's the pro. Are there enough pros for Dario to outweigh that? And I think a lot of time the answer is yes. I think we'll see teams just parade to the basket against him. But at the same time, we saw that happen with John Morant today, and the Suns were still able to pull out a win. They survived for a full season that way, and Dario was a sixth man of the year candidate 2 years ago. So we know there's a rubric for it, and they have enough other options that they're not going to be overly reliant on it. I hope we see that, but Monty just hasn't really wanted to do it all year, so it might be more by committee like you're saying, and it's worked for them. I feel a little nervous heading into the playoffs when any position is by committee, but maybe they don't have a better option. They kind of decided not to roll with a very good backup center this year. They left that position kind of uncertain heading into the season, and I guess they're fine with it.
Yeah, it's good and bad in a way, because like there's some matchups where I think, you know, there's those guys like one, like Bismack might not play in a series like against a certain team, whereas he could be like the most vital piece of that same series. So it's same with Dario. So it just kind of depends on once you get to playoff time, who you're playing, or it could end up being a disaster. So it's tough to really rely on guys like that without investing too heavily in the center position. But I think in terms of just regular season basketball, they have a pretty solid center rotation when they're at full strength, because you can kind of mess with those matchups, like experiment a little bit. But yeah, like you said, come playoff time, it does. There's definitely no guarantees with these guys, and we've seen them have their ups and downs. So hopefully Dario can continue to play confident, and, you know, he ends up, you know, playing like the Dario we all know and love, and gets back to, you know, the, 2021 season Dario Saric. So that's kind of the next step, I think, for this team to really, as they get healthy, playing with bigs that can space the floor and pass, like that's the next evolution in this offense.
Yeah, and stability, as I was trying to get to with this segment. I think, listener, you will realize like it's going to be the next kind of conversation, I think, the rest of, you know, January into February. And Monty was already talking about it pregame today. He's like, there's no easy way, because he's also trying to balance not putting too much on guys' plates when they return, not even in terms of minutes, but just responsibility, conditioning, everything. And now you got to do that while also, okay, which of these players who have proven so much during these past couple of weeks when they've gotten their mojo back a little bit, all right, well, which of them is actually going to stay in the rotation? I think we seem to mostly be on the same page, but Monty has a mind of his own with this stuff, and sometimes it doesn't go how we think. But that'll wrap us up. It's nice to be talking. We said the word playoffs multiple times to each other today, Brandon, which is a very nice change of direction from some of our first pods this month. I hope fans are excited as well. Sonny, please give me your contact information so I can send you this shirt. I'll be back tomorrow. Folks, we have two more home games this week. Aaron Edwards will be here later on in the week, so a lot to get to. Hit follow, hit subscribe, make Locked On Suns your first listen every single day this week and beyond. In the meantime, go make Locked On Sports Today your second listen to get caught up on everything going on around the whole world of sports, pro football, everything you love. That show's available on all podcast platforms, and I will talk to you all tomorrow.